And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning, as always, is brought to you by the good folks over at the Law Group. Melissa Gott and her team. Visit them online, 910, or visit them online, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. I got a lot of messages over the weekend from individuals about the No Kings protests. I'm going to talk about it here just for just a couple of minutes, and then we're going to move on, because in the grand scheme of things, these protests continue to be incredibly inefficient, and I would argue in large part, incredibly useless. And that's really the only way to describe what you continue to see. You look at the crowds of the individuals that showed up Saturday to defend democracy. You look at the pictures of the individuals showing up to rally back against this authoritarian administration that's taking over the world. The king in the Oval Office in Donald Trump. It's just incredibly ineffective. Nothing comes of it. And I included in my morning line email, which if you're not subscribed and getting that, I would encourage you to do so. Go head on over to nickcraig.com/morning line. You can subscribe for free. You'll get an email around 6:30 every weekday morning when we've got a show here on the air. And so you look at these protests. You look at what these groups are claiming and calling and saying that they are fighting against, and it's completely disjointed and disconnected from reality. And then you look at the group of individuals. It's a predominantly old white crowd. It's a bunch of boomers, disenfranchised boomers roaming around the streets of a variety of U.S. cities claiming that they're fighting fascism. Roaming around a variety of U.S. streets claiming that they're fighting the authoritarian nature that is Donald Trump and his administration. It's just useless. So I'm not going to spend a whole hell of a lot of time on it. I appreciate everybody. I got a couple of emails and some posts sent to me on X. Thank you for sending those over. I'm not trying to discount it. I'm not going to spend any time talking about it. There's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to really dive into or dissect or break down. This is a group of individuals that put forth one of the worst presidential candidates in U.S. history in Kamala Harris. They put forth an absolute loser in a candidate. I'm not saying she's a loser as a person. I'm saying as a candidate, she was a complete and total dud, a loser of a candidate. They put her forward with, 110-day, whatever the name of her book is, 107, 105, 110 days right before the presidential election. Surprise, surprise. A candidate that's only running for 100 days gets their ass handed to them. I know you're shocked as well as I am. And so that happened back in November of last year. Here we are almost a year later. And this is a party that is still, incapable is the only word to describe it, to move on from the events of last year. They're trying to not really too dissimilar from what you're seeing in Washington, D.C. right now with the government shutdown, which a note continues this morning, the third longest ever in U.S. history, as we're now in day 20 of the federal government shutdown. What's going on in D.C. right now? Democrats are trying to rehash and relitigate legislation that passed the House and the Senate in June of this year and was signed into law July by President Donald Trump. That's what Democrats are doing in Washington, D.C. That's why the federal government, as we sit here this morning, is shut down. And so then you look at what went on this weekend with the No Kings protests. It's the exact same thing. It is a group of individuals trying to relitigate, rehash November's 2024 presidential election. I don't care that these individuals protest. You're not hearing me say, oh, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. I mean, you're allowed to do whatever the hell you want. If you want to spend your Saturday afternoon trying to relitigate the November 2024 election, more power to you. I mean, if that's what you want to do with your time, have at it. I'm not in any position or any place to tell you whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. You can make that determination yourself. You can decide whether that's a good use of your time or not. From my vantage point, it's not. As somebody that just sat through 4 years of the Biden administration, I didn't spend my Saturday afternoons standing on 3rd Street in downtown Wilmington yelling and screaming about Joe Biden. I went on with my life. I found better things to do. And oh, by the way, I got involved to make sure that Donald Trump was reelected in November of last year, which seems to be kind of the missing piece in all of this. Reading some postings on the Wilmington subreddit this weekend, which I try not to do very often because it's a group of deranged, like out of control radical leftists on the Wilmington subreddit. But I went in there this weekend to see what they were saying about the No Kings thing. And it was funny. I saw even Democrats getting crap from their own side over these protests. I saw a plethora of Democrats posting in the comments section that, hey, you know, this is not a good use of time, right? We need to get engaged. We need to get activated. We need to actually get involved in something that has an impact. And those comments were met very, very negatively. And so it's obvious to me that there are some on the left that have woken up to the realization that standing on the side of the street dressed up as a frog protesting a so-called king in the Oval Office is a huge freaking waste of time. I mean, it is obvious and clear to me that some have come to that rationalization. Some have woken up and smelled the coffee to the extent in which this is a terrible idea. This does not lead to any sort of success. This does not lead to any sort of actual change. And I mean, just look at, you know, for the side that's always talking about diversity. I mean, look at this crowd. It's just a bunch of white people, predominantly boomers. Yeah, you've got your sprinkled in Zoomers and a couple of millennials here and there. But for the most part, it's just a bunch of old white people bitching and complaining because they're unhappy with this administration. This is the absolute opposite of a diverse crowd. This is like predominantly 99%+ white old boomer crowd who's disenfranchised with the federal government and is just generally pissed off because their golden goose and Kamala Harris got shellacked in November of last year. This is the best that they've got. This is the best that they've got. This is the best that they can send. It's a really miserable situation. And so as I was reading through the comments and saw some individuals that I can only presume based on their commentary were on the political left trying to encourage their fellow liberals to actually do something productive, actually do something useful besides standing in front of the old City Hall building and griping and moaning about Trump, to see them be met with backlash, to see them be met with negative commentary over that take, I think is a stronger indication of what I have continued to talk about, which is this ongoing civil war, this ongoing back and forth within the Democrat Party, where you've got individuals who, this group of individuals that is doing nothing. I want to just read you one of these comments. And again, presumably, this is somebody on the left based on the comments. Protesting does nothing, solves nothing, total waste of time. All you have is your vote. Funny how you are all protesting Trump, but what you fail to realize is that he won the election, not because he's great, not because he has great ideas, but simply because the Democrat Party was so bad and embarrassing during the Biden administration. This constant gaslighting and failure after failure. They ran Harris Waltz. Did they really expect to win? They couldn't have picked worse candidates. They failed you all. They failed all voting Democrats. They literally forced the hand of independents and some Democrats to vote for Trump. Now we're stuck with this guy for three more years. So that last sentence, now we're stuck with this guy for three more years, is an indication of this individual's political ideology. This person is not a Trump fan. This individual is not somebody that is in favor of Donald Trump. And so that comment has very negative feedback on the Wilmington subreddit. An individual trying to call out that due to the lack of ideas, due to the lack of any policy, any platform, I might argue really anything at all, he is calling on his fellow Democrats to wake up and say, due to not having any of these things is the reason why Trump won. And that is met with an incredible amount of pushback. That is met with an incredible amount of blowback to this individual. And I'm not going to go through and read some of the follow-up comments because most of them are just almost incomprehensible with the way in which they're speaking. But that just goes to show you, I think, again, that there are competing factions within the Democrat Party. Those that understand that, contrary to your successful protest on Saturday, Donald Trump is still the 47th president of the United States. He is continuing in that position and will continue in that situation, regardless of whether you guys like it or not. So that's going to continue. Unfortunately, I have to pass that along to you as breaking news this morning. And with that, some on the political left are ready to move on. Some on the political left are ready to say, all right, time to deal with the situation at hand, time to get activated, time to get good candidates ready to go, to have a strong midterm election coming up 13 months from now and a huge general election victory in 2028. Some Democrats are ready to be there. Others, including the ones that spent their Saturday afternoon in downtown Wilmington, are just obviously not. These individuals are not serious. These are not serious political minds. These are, I wouldn't even call them activists. They're just interested in feeling like they're having an impact. See, most of the individuals in this group, and I can't speak for every single person, but most of the individuals in this group are engaged and involved in absolutely nothing, like absolutely zero. And they believe that spending an hour and a half on Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning in downtown Wilmington is civic engagement. They believe that this is civic involvement. Now, I will say that this is an issue on both sides of the political aisle. There's plenty of folks on the right that spent 2020 thinking that they were making a hell of a lot of difference by, oh, we're going to do a Trump parade. We're going to drive around town with our American flags and our Trump signs and get Trump elected. Every weekend, consistently, because that absolutely changes elections. We're going to stand on the corner of military cutoff waving an American flag and waving a Trump flag, and that's going to get Donald Trump elected. Both things are equally a huge freaking waste of time and have absolutely no impact on political outcomes, on elections, on candidates getting elected. So if you're one of those individuals, it's a fine thing to do, but you've got to be willing to do the other work. And I would think, thinking and looking at this crowd, it appears obvious that the vast majority of these individuals are not involved in any other meaningful way. And I'll make the same call to those on the political right. It's one thing to hold up your Trump sign on the corner of the road. It's another to knock doors, get involved, donate time, donate money, donate resources, whatever you've got to local candidates to help them actually get elected. This picture, for those listening, we're looking at the protest and the No Kings protest in downtown Wilmington. This picture translates to absolutely nothing. Zero. This does not move the needle literally any way at all. It does not move the needle. And so now the debate seemingly within the Democrat Party is, do we continue to waste our time doing this or do we actually get involved? I think from a feel-good perspective, individuals think this is having an impact, so they're going to continue to do this. But as somebody that is actively involved in political circles and understands how this process works, I can promise you it has absolutely no impact at all. Zero. So that's all I've got to say on the No King stuff. I hope Democrats continue with it. I think it just proves the point that you hear from many on the right, that the left has no ideas, that the left has no policy, that the left has no platform, because everything that they stand for is encapsulated in standing on the side of the street, holding up a sign that says, we don't want kings. No shit, Sherlock. We don't have kings. We're a constitutional republic. We elect a president every 4 years. Trump got elected in November. He's going to be your president for 3 more years, and he's going to term out. So congratulations on your No Kings protest. I hope you can pat yourself on the back. You can think you're fighting against authoritarianism. You can think you're fighting to save America. Bearer bad news, I guess. It has no impact. It's a complete and total waste of time. So congratulations if that's how you spent your Saturday afternoon in downtown Wilmington and nation and states all across the country. Before we move on, a couple of comments coming in on our live chat this morning. They make me sad because it highlights how desperate people are for a community. People want to come together over something. It's a huge shame that it's a huge shame that desire has captured by the mind virus. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is that community thing. And you've got a lot of people that, because they spend all day watching cable news, and I do have sympathy for some, they spend all day watching MSNBC. They spend all day watching CNN. They're not super actively involved, but they just watch this stuff all day. And they feel like the world is crumbling in front of their very eyes, right? It's the reason you've heard this term doomer that has come up. And it is predominantly focused at younger individuals in the Gen Z generation. But the reason that this term doomer has come up is because all these kids think that everything is just doomed, that there's no way for them to get ahead in life, that the country is falling apart, that everything is against them, it's all rigged and set up against them. It creates a terrible mindset. If you're watching 4 or 5 hours of MSNBC every day, you would believe that the country as it stands right now is on the brink of absolute collapse. So you're incredibly depressed over what's going on at the national level. And so you look for some sort of community here, and this is what you get. Some other comment coming in, old white liberal women, the worst. No comment on that at all. Awful, looking at a new acronym, awful, affluent white feminist liberals. That's a pretty good one. Thanks for sending that in. And another comment saying how many of these individuals are watchers of The View. Same thing stands. I mean, if you only consume that kind of media, there is no question about it. You are going to think, you are going to be of the mindset that everything is just on the absolute brink of collapse right now, that there's no hope, that there's no way to go forward. And for many individuals, they find that highly depressing. And I think anybody would. Unfortunately, it doesn't really match reality for them. So this is their outlet. Again, have at it. I don't have any issues with the protests. From all accounts, they stayed pretty peaceful. So have at it. It doesn't affect my life. It's not going to affect any change in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump is not packing up his bags from Pennsylvania Avenue this morning and evacuating the White House because of these protests. It really has no impact. And the president was asked about these No Kings protests aboard Air Force One yesterday on his travels back to the White House. This is what the president had to say.
What's your response to the protests over the weekend, the No Kings protests?
I think it's a joke. I looked at the people. They're not representative of this country. And I looked at all the brand new signs paid for, I guess it was paid for by Soros and other radical left lunatics. It looks like it was. We're checking it out. The demonstrations were very small, very ineffective. And the people were whacked out. When you look at those people, those are not representative of the people of our country.
Mr. President, besides San Francisco.
And by the way, I'm not a king. I work my ass off to make our country great. That's all it is. I'm not a king at all.
So there you go. There's the president's reaction. I'm not a king, and I work my ass off to make this country great. So there's the latest. Another fight against democracy. Another standing up to protect our so-called democracy. That's all I've got to say. There's nothing else to deconstruct. There's really nothing else to highlight with this. It's another useless protest that affects no change and has no impact at all. So we're going to focus some time this morning on things that are actually happening and are actually having an impact. As I mentioned to you on Friday, the president of Ukraine, in Volodymyr Zelensky, was making his way back to Washington, D.C. to have another meeting with the Trump administration, Trump himself, in the White House. We know what happened when a similar meeting took place in March. Zelensky, after getting very combative with Vance and Trump and trying to rehash the war in front of Western media, was completely blown out by Vance and Trump. And so two different things went on during these event on Friday. You had this public there was a lunch that took place. You had these public comments, and then you had the meeting in the Oval Office. And from all accounts, these were two completely different events, at least according to individuals within the administration. So I'm going to play a few minutes of the bilateral lunch opening. The media, of course, came in before lunch was served. Trump and Zelensky and some others spoke for a couple of minutes. It's about a 40-minute video. I'm not playing anywhere near that amount of time. But I'm going to play you this so you can kind of get the scene. And then a very interesting article running over at the Financial Times yesterday about this event taking place, this meeting in the Oval Office. So here is President Donald Trump, members from the U.S. government, Rubio, J.D. Vance, Zelensky, and some of his folks from Ukraine. This is the public events that happened on Friday.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. It's an honor to be with a very strong leader, a man who has been through a lot, and a man who I've gotten to know very well, and we've gotten along really very well. And we had a big call yesterday, as you know, with President Putin, and we'll be talking about it. President Zelensky of Ukraine has endured a lot. I mean, he really has. He's endured a lot, and we've endured it with him, to be honest. It's been a long time, and I think we're making great progress. So we're going to be talking about that today. We'll be talking about what took place yesterday with my phone call with President Putin. And I think that things are coming along pretty well. It began with Alaska, where I think certain guidelines were discussed, and we want to see if we can get this done. This was long ago into the Biden administration. I came here and we inherited this, and we'd like to see if we could finish it, end it. We wanted to end it. So many people have died in this war, and we're gonna get it ended. So,
before the president continues, one thing that I want you to understand about his mindset, and this is again contrary to all of what you heard this past weekend on the left, Trump wants to settle these conflicts. And there is no room for debate on that topic. I mean, look at what the last couple of weeks have given us. The ceasefire continues to hold in the Middle East this morning between Israel and Hamas operating in the Gaza Strip. The president, his team, Steve Witkoff, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, Marco Rubio, and others busted their ass to get that thing to a close, to get both sides to the table and negotiate a deal. All of the alive hostages released, was it last week or the week before? I mean, so this president and this administration has made it abundantly clear that they're trying to bring this stuff to an end. And so there is growing, I would imagine, I don't know this for certain, no inside track here, but I would imagine, and it seems pretty obvious, that there is continued growing frustration with this administration with the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war. You've seen the president over the last week or two make some pretty harsh comments against the Russian president and Putin, rightfully so, calling out his nonsense about not actually wanting to bring this war to an end. And you're seeing the same thing on the Ukrainian side. So as you're listening to the president's comments, just keep in the back of your mind that they want to bring this thing to a close. They've invested an ungodly amount of time, energy, and resources into trying to bring this thing to a close. And there has, for the most part, not been any significant movement whatsoever on it. So there is, I'm pretty confident that there's growing frustration with it within this administration on this war.
I just want to thank you all very much. If you have a couple of questions, go ahead, please. In fact, before I do that, let me just ask the president to say a few words. Thank you, President.
Pleasure. Glad to meet you again, Mr. President. Thank you very much for the invitation. Again, my congratulations with your successful ceasefire in the Middle East.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you did it. And I think this is a momentum to finish Russia's war against Ukraine. I think that, yes, we understand that Putin is not ready. I think not ready, but I think that I'm confident that with your help, we can stop this war. And we really need it. We see that they don't have successful steps on the battlefield, and it's good. I think that their army is weak now, but a lot of losses. They have a lot of losses and in economy and people. And I think this is a very important moment. And I wanted to thank you, Mr. President, after our phone calls. Yesterday I had a good opportunity to meet with the big American energy companies, and they're ready to help us. Yes, after all these attacks on our infrastructure, Russian attacks, and etc. And I had also meetings, thanks to your team. We had meetings with a good military companies. We spoke about air defense, and I want to share it after with details where we are. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. President.
And I think it looks beautiful in his jacket.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I hope people notice. It's a good. It's actually very stylish. I like it.
President Trump.
Please, go ahead.
Under the Biden administration, the White House was fearing of a possible escalation. They were not allowing the Ukrainians to strike into Russia, fearing of this escalation.
Yeah.
Would your administration allow Ukrainians to strike deep into Russia?
We're going to be talking about that. That's something we'll be talking about. You're right. It's an escalation, but we'll be talking about that.
Mr. President, Zelensky joined you in Hungary to meet President Putin.
Because it's a leader that we like. We like Viktor Orban. He likes him. I like him. It's a country that's a safe country. Done a very good job. He's been a very good leader in the sense of running his country. It doesn't have a lot of the problems that other countries have. And so we've decided that we'll be going to be with Viktor Orban. And he will, I think he'll be a very good host.
President Trump.
Hungary, yeah.
We're
doing Hungary, yeah.
Trilateral meeting, or is it just you and Putin?
To be determined, but I would say most likely it's going to be a double meeting. It'll be a double meeting, but we will have the president, Zelensky, in touch. There's a lot of bad blood with the two presidents, and I'm not speaking out of turn when I say it. It's a very difficult situation. You know, we just settled the war, and after thousands of years, I guess, people say anywhere from 500 to 3,000 years, and I was in rooms, as you saw, because you were with me. A lot of you were with me last week with leaders that didn't like each other, but they were able to get along. These two leaders do not like each other, and we want to make it comfortable for everybody. So one way or the other, we'll be involved in threes, but it may be separated.
President Trump.
Was he what? Where are you from?
From Ukraine. He actually had a
conversation
with me.
Good, yeah.
What if Mr. President Putin doesn't agree to peace in Hungary? What do you do then? Do you have...
Well, let's see what happens. I mean, you know, what if? I think he will. I think that President Putin wants to end the war, or I wouldn't be talking this way. I think he wants to end the war. I spoke to him yesterday for 2.5 hours. We went through a lot of details. He wants to get it ended. I think that President Zelensky wants to get it ended. Now we have to get it done.
So that's about it. I mean, I'll throw the full link to this over in the show notes if you're interested in seeing more and listening to it. I mean, there's some more questions. It runs about another 22 or 23 minutes. So there's more questions and more back and forth. But you're getting the general sense. And again, I'll highlight that this is an administration that has invested an incredible amount of time and effort into trying to bring this thing to a close. And there is growing frustration. And I would say, and I felt the same way with the Israel-Hamas-Gaza situation that finally got resolved over the last couple of weeks, that this administration is coming probably very close to throwing up its hands and saying, you know what, we've done everything that we can. We've gotten together with both leaders. As you heard from the president, he had a 2.5-hour phone call with Putin last week. Zelensky on Friday, once again at the Oval Office. The president is traveling to Hungary. We'll have another in-person meeting with Putin, presumably then another separate meeting with Zelensky or other high-ranking members within the Ukrainian government. There's only so much more effort and time that this administration is going to be able to put in. And that's just from a practical way, a practical use of time and resources. You know, the president continues to say publicly, and I don't know if he actually believes it, that both sides want peace. I have made the point for quite some time that I don't know that either side wants peace. I think both of them want the war to come to an end, but neither wants peace. Neither actually is interested in making the steps possible that would allow it to come to an end. Putin doesn't want to admit defeat. Zelensky doesn't want to give up any territory. And so with that being the case, it is going to be impossible to settle this conflict, at least as it stands right now. So there was a very interesting article, as I noted, that ran over at the Financial Times over the weekend. And I want to read through that and get into some of those details as we watch this situation continue to unfold here. Oval Office meeting, this lunch, and some of these bilateral conversations continuing as this administration definitely has plenty to deal with domestically and is spending a whole lot of time dealing with some of these international issues as well. We'll continue the conversation coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Don't forget that The Nick Craig Show, if you are listening after the fact via your favorite podcast app, The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. You can, of course, also, if you are a live listener and miss any portion, check out the show via podcast in any of your favorite podcast apps, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you get your shows. Search for The Nick Craig Show, tap the subscribe or follow button, and you'll get a new program each and every weekday morning. Early voting does pick up again today for municipal elections across North Carolina. We'll get a quick word from Wilmington City Council candidate Richard Collier, and we'll grab a quick break and return on the other side as we continue to discuss the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. You're listening and watching The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wilmington's growing, and it's easy to see why. It's a great place to live, work, and raise a family. But growth brings real challenges. It's traffic, stressed infrastructure, and overdevelopment. I'm Richard Collier. I've spent 30 years solving complex infrastructure problems. And now, I'm ready to put that experience to work.
Richard Collier for City Council. Smart, responsible leadership for Wilmington.
And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Hopefully you enjoyed your weekend, or nice one for the most part, across southeastern North Carolina and the state as a whole, as we continue our conversation this morning about a very important meeting and a set of meetings that took place in Washington, D.C. on Friday, as Donald Trump and the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met together in the Oval Office. An interesting comment coming in on our YouTube chat this morning says that Zelensky sounds much more respectful than in the past. Well, hopefully he learned his lesson. I mean, you'll remember back to March when he spent some time in the Oval Office getting literally ran out of town by Trump and J.D. Vance after he completely miscategorized the situation that was unfolding and tried to rehash the whole situation in front of Western media. Vance and Trump weren't putting up with it. They jumped down his throat and literally kicked him out of the White House, with him then, you know, essentially having to beg to come back. And, well, that is what unfolded on Friday. So you heard some of the public comments. Everything seemed pretty good. Both sides want peace. We're continuing the discussions. We're continuing the conversation. However, an article ran Saturday over at the Financial Times, and it paints a very different picture as to what happened in the private meeting. So I'm going to just read through it. It says, Donald Trump urged Vladimir Zelensky to accept Russia's terms for ending its war in a violent White House meeting on Friday, warning that Vladimir Putin has said he would destroy Ukraine if he did not agree. The meeting between the U.S. and Ukrainian presidents descended many times into a shouting match, with Trump cursing all the time, people familiar with the meeting told the Financial Times. They added that the U.S. president tossed aside maps of the front line in Ukraine and insisted that Zelensky surrender the entire Donbas region to Putin, and repeatedly echoed talking points that the Russian leader had made in their call the day earlier. Though Ukraine ultimately managed to swing Trump back to endorsing a freeze of the current front lines, the meeting appeared to reflect the nature of Trump's position on the war and his willingness to endorse Putin's demands. And so this is the situation that's unfolding, and it's why you have not seen an end to this conflict as of yet. Putin is wanting the Donbas region, or at least part of the Donbas region. Ukraine is of the mindset, the very small country that they are, that they have to give up no territory whatsoever. And with those two things being kind of in stone or cemented, there's never going to be a resolution. I have made this point for a long time, and of course those on the political left try and claim that, oh, you're cowtailing to Putin, you're giving the Russian government and Vladimir Putin whatever he wants. No, the reality is very simple. Ukraine is a very small country. Russia is a much larger country. The Donbas region was recently given to Ukraine under previous administrations. And so somebody is going to have to give up something. That's the only way that this thing is going to end. I don't have to like it. You don't have to like it. But you have to be able to look at the reality of the situation. And there is no question about it. This is just from a pure military and a resource standpoint. If Vladimir Putin today decided that he was going to take over Ukraine, which is obviously what his goal was a couple of years ago, but if he decided today that there was going to be no peace, that this was never going to move forward, that all of the negotiations were off, Ukraine likely could be conquered within the matter of just a couple of weeks. Probably. Maybe not, but that from a pure military might and standpoint, Russia, the much larger country, literally has an entire continent dedicated to it, has the ability to completely level Ukraine. And so you need to be able to look at that and understand the situation that is unfolding. We're talking about war. It's not fair. Not everything is equal. This is not a game of patty cakes, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking about hundreds of thousands of individuals that have died on either side of this conflict in the years that it's been brewing. And so the question at hand is very simple. Are you willing to give up a little to bring the conflict to a close? That is the question that the Ukrainian president should be asking himself. If he's unwilling to do so, then the war goes on. And at that point, the United States needs to get completely hands off. Full on laissez-faire. There is no negotiation that's going to be met. Let the two continue to fight it out in Europe, and it's not our freaking problem anymore. No more money, no more resources, no more phone calls. If neither side is truly willing to have the negotiations and discuss peace, then there's nothing more for the United States to do. Let it be Europe's problem. Let the EU deal with it. Let Germany deal with it. Let the UK deal with it. Let them. It's their problem. It's their neighbors. It's in their backyard. Let them solve the problem. Let them deal with it. You know, it's funny. All of these European leaders surged to Zelensky in March after he was kicked out of the White House and, oh, we're not going to put up with this. We're going to fight back. Yet they've done nothing since this conflict broke out. It's been the United States that has been the predominant force funding this ongoing war. It has been the United States that has given billions of dollars to Ukraine. We are currently, U.S. taxpayers are subsidizing the Ukrainian equivalent to Social Security. We are paying their individuals a Social Security check every single month. The United States is funding that. And so, as I mentioned earlier, I do strongly believe in this reporting from the Financial Times would back up the fact that this administration, Trump in particular, is growing ever more frustrated with the conflict. He is doing his damnedest to get this thing to a close, and it appears that both sides in various forms are unwilling to negotiate in good faith. You've seen the frustration that he's had with Putin over the last couple of weeks, and you've seen the frustration that he's had with Zelensky over the last couple of months. And so that is the snapshot of the situation that we are in right now. Is it perfect? No. Is everybody going to win? No. Are sides going to have to concede? Yes. That's how negotiations work. That's how war is brought to an end. Look at what just happened between Israel and portions of the Gaza Strip and the Hamas group. Now, again, will they follow through? That's a different discussion. Hamas is going to disarm, at least they're going to, or Trump said he's going to essentially level them. They're going to disarm. They gave the troops, they gave the hostages back to Israel. The IDF pulled back to an agreed upon line. It's a negotiation. Both sides gave up concessions. Israel released some 2,000 prisoners back to Hamas. Right, so there's concessions. That's how negotiation and conflict resolution works. And I have thought for years now that truly neither side is actually interested in the Russia-Ukraine war. Neither side is truly interested in making any concessions whatsoever. Back to the Financial Times article. The meeting between Trump and Zelensky came amid a fresh push by the U.S. president to end Russia's war following the ceasefire secured by Israel and Hamas. Zelensky and his team went to the White House hoping to persuade Trump to supply them with long-range Tomahawk cruise missiles, but the president ultimately decided not to do so. The tense meeting echoed a similar encounter at the White House in February, in which Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance lambasted Zelensky for what they characterized as a lack of gratitude towards the United States. During Friday's meeting, Trump appeared to have adopted many of Putin's talking points, even when they contradicted his own recent statements about Russia's weakness, said European officials briefed on the meeting. Again, what I believe from European officials is literally nothing. They've sat while this war has brewed in their own backyard and just continued to lean on the United States to be the good guys in the room. According to European officials with the knowledge of the meeting, Trump told Zelensky that the Ukrainian leader needs to cut a deal or face destruction. It seems pretty accurate, doesn't it? The official said that Trump told Zelensky he was losing the war, warning, quote, it's a direct quote from Trump apparently, if Putin wants to, he will destroy you. Is that plausible? Yeah, I'd say so. Is there a possibility that that happens? Yeah, I mean, I think there's a real possibility. Again, from a pure resource standpoint, from a pure military might standpoint, there is a possibility of that. And that needs to be on the mind of the Ukrainian president. And Trump obviously tried to make that point as clear as possible. At one point in the meeting, President Trump threw Ukrainian maps of the battlefield off to one side, the official familiar with the encounter said. The White House and the Ukrainian president's office did not immediately respond to the Financial Times request for comments. However, Trump told Fox News on Sunday that he was confident about securing an end to the conflict, adding that Putin is, quote, going to take something. He's won certain property. Putin made a new offer to Trump on Thursday, under which Ukraine would surrender portions of the eastern Donbas region under its control in exchange for some small areas of two southern frontline regions in Ukraine. The Russian proposal marks a small concession from that made during Putin's last meeting with Trump in Alaska in August, where he said he would agree to freeze the line of contact elsewhere on the front lines if Ukraine surrendered the Donbas region. The meeting also ended after Putin rejected Trump's push for an immediate ceasefire and did not move forward with that, talking about the meeting in Alaska in August of this year. As it stands right now, Russian forces have struggled to retain the territory in the southern portion of Ukraine that Putin offered in exchange and have made virtually no progress on the battlefield since 2022 when the war began. According to the chairman of the Ukrainian Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, to give the Donbas region to Russia without a fight is unacceptable for Ukrainian society, and Putin knows that. He said that Putin might have been pushing this idea with the purpose of causing division within Ukraine and undermining the unity of the country. So that's what we know right now. Unlike the Israeli-Hamas conflict, I do not have a good feeling moving forward on the Russia-Ukraine war. I think both sides, that being Putin and Zelensky, are coming at this from a completely unrealistic standpoint. I think both of them are in some sort of weird echo chamber where they believe that both of them can win the war. And I'll make this point again. What is winning the war for Ukraine? Taking over all of Russia? There is a 0% chance of that happening. What is winning the war for Ukraine look like? They're obviously not capable of pushing the Russian troops out of the Donbas region. They're obviously not. Again, the war's been going on since 2022. It's been 3 years now. So what is winning? Right, somebody wins, somebody loses. Many of you may have watched either college or NFL football on over the weekend. One team wins, they score more points than the other, they win. What is winning for Ukraine? Is it just keeping all of their region? I don't know. I'm not in the mind of the Ukrainian president. What is winning for Russia? Presumably taking over all of Ukraine, area that used to be part of the USSR. That would presumably be what winning is for them. I don't believe either side is going to win. Neither side is going to get what they want. Ukraine doesn't have the military might to push Russian forces out, and Russia seemingly doesn't have the military might to completely take over Ukraine. If they were going to do so, they would have done it 3 years ago, but they were woefully unsuccessful. This has now turned into nothing more than a pride and ego contest for both countries. The Russian president refuses to admit that the what once great USSR, the once great Soviet Union, is now relegated to a position where they can't even take over a relatively small geographical area. So Putin is completely deluged by the fact that Russia is no longer the country that it was. So he's got a huge amount of ego, a huge amount of pride, and a huge amount of propaganda invested in making sure that that vision, that public perception of Russia continues. It's not. It's been shattered by his lack of ability militarily in this war. And from the Ukrainian side, you've got a president there that has no path for any sort of victory. Again, what does that look like? I don't even know what it means when you hear this phrase, Ukraine's going to win the war. What the hell does that mean? What is the determining factor that is victory? Is it pushing Russia completely out of all of the Ukrainian territory? If so, they've been unsuccessful. It's been 3 years. So this notion and this concept that the Ukrainians are just going to have this random surge and randomly are just going to have this major push that forces all of the Russian forces out is a pipe dream. There's nothing backing it up. The country, in many cases, has been rubbleized. Their economy is non-existent. It is only propped up by the United States and some European nations that have kicked in a couple of pennies here or there. Again, the United States is currently paying for the Social Security program in Ukraine. There's nothing left. So what is winning? What is the war winning? What does it look like? I don't believe that there's a good answer to that question. The president, again, the big news out of this meeting, refusing to supply some of these long-range Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. And I think time is running out rapidly for the Ukrainian president in Vladimir Zelensky and for Russian President Putin. The time is dwindling. the time is running out rapidly. If neither of these sides are truly interested in coming to a resolution, if neither of these sides are truly interested in bringing this thing to a close, which I don't believe is the case, I think you only get a little bit more of Trump and Vance and Rubio before they just wipe their hands clean and say, you know what? We tried our damnedest. We did everything that we could. We tried to broker the conversations. We tried to bring the sides together, but to no avail. And I don't see that as a loser mentality. I don't see that as a loss. There is the phrase and the colloquialism, you know, putting good money after bad. There's only so much time and energy and effort and resources that this administration has. There's 24 hours in a day. There's a limited number of people within this administration. And if I'm a strong believer from the president's standpoint, who will make the final decision, if he doesn't see and he is not of the mindset that both sides are actually moving towards some sort of resolution, he is soon to probably wipe his hands clean of it. Turn it over to the UK. Turn it over to the EU. Turn it over to all these other great European nations that we always hear about, and let them broker the deal. Let them negotiate peace. Let them figure out a resolution to the conflict. As a United States citizen, I am sick of hearing about this war. I am sick of my hard-earned tax dollars propping up the Ukrainian economy with seemingly no path to victory in sight. It is a complete and total waste of time, resources, and money. And the end result is hundreds of thousands of people have died. For what? Nothing. The war has been going on for 3 years. Neither side has been successful. This is a very tough issue for this administration to deal with. I think Trump thought, and he's kind of alluded to it, that this would have been a lot easier to deal with, that he was actually going to be able to bring both of these sides together and find some swift resolution to it. And it's not from a lack of effort. It's not from a lack of trying. You've seen nothing but attempts from this administration to bring this thing to a close. And it's unfortunate that both sides are seemingly so stuck up in their own egos, are being so freaking stubborn about the situation that they're facing, that it has gotten to the point where it is. So apparently a meeting between Trump and Putin in Hungary over the next couple of weeks, that could be the last straw. If he determines that Putin is truly not interested, then he might just say, to hell with it, I'm done. Depending on how that meeting goes, and then maybe a follow-up, a conversation or meeting with the Ukrainian president, same thing could be the end result. I genuinely, and you've heard from folks that have followed me for quite some time, I typically don't like saying to you, I don't have any idea what's going to happen here. I like to generally have a pretty good idea of what's going on, and not necessarily a prediction, but try and lay out what the path holds forward. I genuinely have no clue. But I do know that the frustration is growing. We saw it earlier this year back in the Oval Office, and from European officials and those that apparently were in the meeting, there was a lot of frustration in the Oval Office on Friday as the president is trying to do everything in his power to bring this thing to a close. And it's incredibly unfortunate that to this point, neither side seems to be operating as good faith negotiators or good faith actors in it at all. It's incredibly unfortunate, and I can guarantee you it is very, very frustrating for the president of the United States. So we will keep an eye on that and see how that unfolds in the coming weeks, and provide additional coverage and details as they are relevant coming up right here on the Nick Craig Show. All right, a couple of quick things before we get out of here on this Monday morning. Redistricting set to be a major topic of discussion in the North Carolina General Assembly today. New maps were dropped by the Republican-led General Assembly on Thursday. Those maps are kind of rehashed the first and third congressional districts just north of us here in southeastern North Carolina. Some votes will be taking place on that over the next couple of days. And one other interesting thing, and we've seen this before, I'm not trying to put the horse before the carriage, but this is the House calendar on the General Assembly's website for this morning. And as you look at this at 10 o'clock when they're supposed to gavel in, there are a plethora of veto overrides, six of them that still sit in the North Carolina House. Some big ones in here. Senate Bill 50 is constitutional carry. A couple of DEI-related bills, a Border Protection Act. These have been sitting in the North Carolina House for months now because lawmakers, the Republicans in the House, do not have a supermajority. They do not have the ability to override a governor's veto with just Republican votes. Things are pretty interesting in Raleigh right now. Of course, Cecil Brockman, a Democrat, was arrested back a couple of weeks ago. I'm not immediately clear whether he's out of jail or not. So if he is not in in the General Assembly this morning, Republicans would have the veto-proof majority. We've seen this before. I'll note typically when they when you look at their calendar and they're set to come back, these items are on there. Then they are typically pushed aside because they don't have the votes. We'll get another crack or shot at that this week. I'll keeping you up to date with those details throughout the day at the General Assembly. You can follow me over on X at Nicholas M. Craig. I'll be keeping you up to date with everything there and over at the Nick Craig Show on Facebook as well. Well, that's going to do it for a Monday edition. Thanks to the good folks, Melissa Gott and her team over at the Law Group for their continued support of the show. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. Also, thanks to those that support the show on Patreon over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. We're back tomorrow morning right here.